multidimensional fractal of consciousness currently expressing itself as a human being in the most authentic way that we can imagine. Always remember, take only what resonates and leave the rest. Welcome to Mental Magic. The first law of thermodynamics, according to Albert Einstein, is that energy cannot be created or destroyed. It can only be changed from one form to another. Now, this law will come as no surprise to many of you. However, when it comes to applying this widely accepted fact to our understanding of how our bodies operate, we can face some internal and external resistance. So my guest today beautifully explains how the health of our energetic body has real-life implications on the health of every other layer of our bodies, including but not limited to our mental body, emotional body, and physical body, just to name a few. The intention is for this episode to be an introduction into the world of energetic healing, and as a professional intuitive therapist and energy worker, Anna Marie's life journey, experiences, and wisdom shine through to give us all insight into the complicated yet dynamic realms of our inner selves and the ways that we can show up to foster health and well-being from inside out. At the end of the episode, she explains her current service offerings, which I highly recommend exploring if you are at all interested, because she is fantastic. And for listeners of the podcast, you can use promo code MAGIC23 for $50 off any of her services. And all of her contact information, as well as the promo code, will be in the show notes below. So without further ado, please enjoy Anna Marie Green. Hi, everyone. Today we have a guest that I am so excited to bring to your attention, bring to your awareness, and I just wanted to mention right off the bat, I did have the most amazing reading with today's guest a couple of weeks ago. She really got into my core wounds. Basically, I felt naked as she was giving me the reading, and it has helped me tremendously in shifting just some ways that I see myself, and as well as the energetic clearing that was given, I felt the effects, and I know how powerful that this work can be. So first, you can introduce yourself.
Yes, absolutely. And thank you for having me. So my name is Anna Marie Green. I am an intuitive therapist. I'm a licensed clinical therapist and a professional intuitive, and I help individuals navigate complex mental health challenges and life's difficulties by combining psychology and energy work to help you get your results and reach your goals faster, more efficiently, and take the complexity out of mental health and treating mental health problems.
It's so amazing that there is this blend of the actual licensed medical mental health treatment as well as the intuitive. And yeah. So with the podcast, my first question that I asked all of my guests is, what does it feel like to be you?
Oh, what does it feel like to be me? So, and I actually love that question because I've never been asked it before. So for me, it feels like being vibrantly full of color and navigating the world with like so much feeling. You know, I am somebody, and I've been like this since I was a child, who I always felt everything so intensely whenever somebody else was going through something. And I've been blessed that I've always seen that as kind of like a strength, or seen that as something that is good. So, you know, I walk around the earth like very optimistically seeing the light and the brightness in other people, even if they don't see it in themselves, which is what I think really brought me into this work in the first place, because I'm a social worker by trade. So I've always had that optimism, that ability to see past, you know, what the present problems might be. And I'm very curious. So like, it also feels like being very curious about the world, how things work, why things work. What if we put these things together? Little bit of scientist in there as well.
Yeah, it definitely seems like that. It's just like, okay, what are the issues and how can we make them better, right?
Yes, absolutely.
And so with having your background in social work and then becoming a licensed therapist, what was that journey like for you? Like, how did you even get into social work? And I know you mentioned before you really liked as a kid, you know, you felt people's energy.
So I, when getting into social work, when I was first like looking at colleges, I remember I was like thinking maybe psychology, because I've always had a fascination with how people's mental processes work, why they make the decisions they make, why they feel the way that they feel. But I met this really great professor who was my advisor in undergrad, And I was kind of telling him what I wanted to do. Growing up, I grew up with a learning disability and I still have epilepsy to this day. So I was, you know, I was in special education classes. I had an IEP at a 504 and I saw and witnessed some of the challenges that people experienced. And I'm very fortunate that my disability and even my learning disability were not so severe that I couldn't function. Like most people wouldn't even realize that I have a disability or that I was in IEP classes. So I became an advocate for other people like me. And I learned to navigate those systems. And I was very, very passionate about it. I'm still very passionate about it. You know, when I was in high school, I was representing a statewide, the Epilepsy Foundation in Pennsylvania and going to the Capitol and advocating for certain legislation, talking about what would be best, you know, for individuals who had an IEP and how schools could help them. So I got into social work even before I knew what it was in that way. And when I went to college, my professor was like, well, what you're describing is social work. It's not psychology. And then it's funny because I actually never saw myself as becoming a therapist. I was very much like, I want to do the macro work. I want to change the systems because that's going to help people who are doing the one-to-one work. And I've always been really good at like, okay, let's try this. Like, you know, this works in this industry and this is how things work in this industry. Let's apply it over here. And it wasn't until after grad school, because I did undergraduate social work and like a minor in communications. And then I went to get my master's degree and I had my daughter like my senior year in college. So like there's all these things happening in my life where then I'm also opening myself up to another challenge where I also got to experience like, what is it like for single moms, for moms out there? And how can we change that system? Just threw me deeper into the work. And when I went to grad school, I was getting my master's in social work. And I was actually going to get, I was in a dual degree program where I was going to get my Juris Doctorate as well. But my partner died in the middle of that schooling. So then I was like, I'm just going to finish the MSW and then I'll get to work. I'm not going to take any more time away. And then it wasn't until 2020 that I became a therapist. And part of it was, you know, I wanted that one-to-one work, but I also was dealing with a lot of like employment issues from COVID and the pandemic. Mm-hmm. And somebody had offered me a job as a therapist. And I was like, well, that's not really like what I want to do. And he's like, I think you'd be great at it. And he became like one of my mentors. And I was great at it. When I was in college, that was one of the things that my professors were like, you're naturally very good at this. Like I got the highest marks and stuff. And so that put me into that field. And at the same time, I was also learning about all this energy work on the side to try to help me get through my grief and navigate the world, a world that I didn't plan for. You know, I was somebody before who had a 10-year plan. I was going to, you know, even when I had a daughter, I was like, that doesn't stop the 10-year plan. Like it's still going. But then when my partner passed, it just, everything changed. And that's the energy work really is what helped me the most because I had a hard time opening up in therapy myself. Because I'm very much a person who's like, I help other people. If I can help other people, like I don't need help myself. Like I can figure out my own stuff. So that was a long like tangent of my background, but
it's great. It's great. And I'm so sorry to hear about your partner.
Hey, yeah. It was hard, but it's okay. Thank you though. Thank you.
Yeah. And so with the energy work component of becoming an intuitive therapist. I know for me, I didn't open up even my mind to the idea of energy work until about 2019, 2020. Yeah. And it seems like it's becoming something that I think is going to become part of a natural way that we do therapy is understanding that we are all energy. There is an energetic component to our emotions, to how we're connecting with others. And so having that understanding, what was it like for you as a therapist? Was there like barriers in that process? Was it received well?
Yeah. So I really started to add it. I added it very slowly. And I would say it was received pretty well, mostly because the way that I think I introduced it, I wasn't introducing it with like new clients. It was clients I had maybe been seeing for, you know, a month or two, or like I felt already like we worked very well together. Mm-hmm. And they did receive it really well. And the ones that I did implement it with had so much better results and a lot quicker and had all these breakthroughs a lot, like just sooner, like, and we, and relieved from their symptoms. But I agree with you. I think that this is a natural way that therapy is going to go. You know, there's so many different subsets of therapy, of ways to practice, that I think that this is just going to be one of them. I think the hardest part with this is, like, sometimes insurance companies can be really, that was my biggest, you know, hurdle with that. Mm-hmm. It's just like insurance companies can be a little like funky. So you have to navigate that, and it can be difficult. And so I know that that's like one of the things in the field is like people have insurance, they want to use insurance to pay for it, but insurances can be kind of buttheads about paying therapists.
Fair. That's the system for you. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So how would you, or if you were to tell someone you were an intuitive therapist, like how would you describe that to someone?
So the way that I would describe that is that you get the clinical scientific benefit of therapy, of a specific modality of therapy. My specialty is cognitive behavioral therapy, but then you're also getting this like shift. So, and I explain it to people as everything is made of energy, every thought, like, and that has been scientifically proven over and over again. Mm-hmm. So whether it's thoughts that you're struggling with, it's an emotion, it's a specific, you know, past trauma, it has its own energetic coding, it has its own energetic identification marker that people who are energy workers, are professional intuitives, can see, can feel, can navigate. And so when you do energy work and you're clearing things on an energetic level, think of it as like when you're building a house, like you create this foundation. If you make sure that the land is ready to be built on, it makes everything else so much easier down the road. And that's the same with energy work. You're clearing these things from your energy so that your physical body and your cognitive functioning can follow suit and allow yourself to be free of whatever the symptoms are, because symptoms are really just, you know, a wound expressing itself. It's not something you have to be stuck with. It's not something that you should like silence, because think of that as like, if you stubbed your toe, you know, and your nerves send you these painful shocks, letting you know there's a table or something there that you shouldn't run the rest of your body into. You don't cut off your toe because you stubbed your toe, like to not feel that pain again. So that's how I would kind of describe it. And it's really the ability to process, but without the re-traumatizing feeling a lot of times, because you're clearing it on an energetic level, you're actually able to cognitively process things. Your body's able to relax. I hope this is making sense.
It makes total sense. Yes. And with becoming someone who is professional in the energetic field of learning how to clear, what was that process like? Was there a formal training? How did you get into that?
So I had been following, so my teacher, her name's Nikki Novo. I had been following her for a while, for years before I took the leap. You know, I'd gotten a reading from her. And then one summer I was like, you know what? I think I'm going to take her. Like I'd taken a couple of her other courses, I think. And I was like, I think I'm going to take her certification program. And it is a 3 to 4 month program. I think it's called the Soul Reading Method. It was called Soul Teacher when I took it. But essentially those 3 to 4 months, you are in a community of other people, usually other women, and you're learning, you know, shamanic healings. You're learning how to read energy, how to connect with it, how to ground, how to protect, everything that you need to be able to do this work for other people. And it was fun to learn, but it was a lot of like deep, because when, as you continue to heal and learn the things to heal other people, your own stuff is coming up. Right. Mm-hmm. So, and you practice on your colleagues, on your peers. And so you're getting lots of readings and healings, and they're getting lots of readings and healings. By the time I was done with that 3 to 4 month program, I had read over 60 people. I had read and did healings on over 60 people. So I really felt prepared to take it out into the world officially. Mm-hmm. And then you have a practicum at the end where you do a reading and healing, you send it in, and there's kind of like a panel of people, or like Nikki and somebody else who's been a practitioner for a while, review and let you know if you like passed it or not, or if you need more training. So it's like a formal, you know, as formal as something can be when there's not like an official license through the state.
Correct.
Then I also have mentors. So after that, I took a medical intuitive level 1 and level 2 with one of my mentors and friends at Abigail White. She's a nurse and a medical intuitive. So I continue to learn and grow my skills. And that's kind of how it continues to evolve and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, well, I can say from experience, your skills are very tuned in.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yes. And so if someone's never done energy work before, I know for me, when I first got into it, interesting, weird, you know, someone else is in your energy, and you eventually start to develop the sensitivity to where you can feel when someone else is in your energy.
Yes. Yeah.
And so for people who haven't had this experience, how would you kind of put their mind at ease and explain it to them in a way to where it's not like, I'm going to invade in your space?
Yeah. Yeah. So I always tell people, you know, I set the intention before every reading. And that's also something I tell people, because some people are like, well, how do I know that you have like good, like some, that you're not pulling, like my mom, for example, was like, well, how do you know you're not pulling dark energy? You're like, I was raised Catholic. So my parents are very like, this is sounding a little witchy, you know, and they have concerns about it. And a lot of people do. I had those concerns before I really got into this work. And I always think of it like, you know, it's about the intentions of the person that you're working with and actually knowing the person you're working with. You know, have you interacted with them? Have you been following them on social media? What do you know their mission? What do they stand for? What do they love and care about? Because that's going to tell you about the intentions they might set for you. So before every reading, I set the intention that whatever comes through is in the highest and greatest good of the client. And I clear my own ego, my fears, my judgments that might otherwise show up. I kind of like turn my ego off, which is a trick that we learned in the program. And I said, like, another thing to set your mind at ease is we're not going to show you anything that you're not ready for, if that makes sense, because your guides and source, who that's who I work with, we're in it for your highest and greatest good. And even if they show me something that, and they might tell me like, hey, they're not ready to hear this exactly, but this is going to be what they're working on. And here's the steps to help them work on that. So even if it's not a conscious working on it, that's going to come through the reading as well. So I had somebody, a client the other day, who she was like, you know, with therapy, they want you to do all of the digging and just kind of talk about it. But sometimes you don't know where to dig. And right. She was like, this reading was like showing me exactly where I needed to go, what I needed to do. And without me having to like play a guessing game for however long it usually is in therapy. And that's really what it is. And because I'm also a therapist, if difficult things do come up, I am equipped to help you process them like in the session. So it's not something where, you know, I'm not just digging into things willy-nilly, like, oh, let's just pull this. This intention is set. And it really is also about what you want to focus on. So if you have a problem, like, I just struggle connecting, you know, in relationships, or I just can't seem to attract the right person, whatever it might be, whatever is associated with that problem. Because like I said, everything has its own energetic code is what I will be shown and what we will discuss. And I will also say that with most readings, because of the way that I do them, once I cut the cord, which is after you will receive the reading, I don't remember the details. I don't like, it's not usually something where like I can remember working with somebody, but I don't remember the details. And that's just because everything is channeled. Everything is, you know, so I like to give listeners that kind of peace of mind of like, how can you feel like safe and secure? There's different practitioners usually have some type of ethical protocol. Like I kind of have, I call it energetic HIPAA, you know?
Right.
I hope that answered your question.
Oh, perfectly. Yes. And, you know, I've had readings from several different people, and it is always so important for me to speak to the person and be able to feel at this point, I can feel energetically what that intention is, but especially people who, when you're starting out, it's helpful to know that that person, you know, has their own protections, has their own boundaries, and then is going forward and doing it in an ethical way with you.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And so, you know, I'm kind of approaching this from a perspective of people who haven't necessarily had an experience with energy work, because, you know, I haven't talked a whole lot about it on my podcast yet. It's something that I'm extremely passionate about, but it's like new for me to talk about it. And so with people who are familiar with this kind of work and have been doing it for a while, one thing that came up for me in my reading with you is that because I knew about some of those core wounds that you had mentioned, and I felt like I had been working on them for a while, I started to realize as I was processing that I think there are different layers to the woundings and they can come up, you know, after years of working on them, but it doesn't mean you haven't done the work, right?
Absolutely. Yes.
You know, it's just a new piece of it that's coming up to get your attention.
Yes. Yeah. And that's the thing. Like, it's never that you're doing all this stuff wrong. I usually see like two different types of things, like people who have been working on it for a while and it's just another layer. And then there are people who have been trying to work on it, but because they're so disconnected, like emotionally, to try to protect themselves. Their survival strategies are so good mm-hmm. that the talk therapy, for example, that they've been doing hasn't been moving the needle, because at the core of their energy, the wound still is very, very persistent. So even like trying to cognitively process it, it's just a lot slower. But as for the different layers, you know, when you are up leveling or you're working towards a dream and all these different things, a lot of times a different layer of the same wound or a similar wound can reappear. And it's just because it's a deeper and it's in a different part of yourself. And really that's just, think of it as kind of like, you know, shedding, mm-hmm. Like, okay, you shed this layer, but now there's just kind of, it might still be on the inside layer as well. So don't ever get disheartened, you know, for those listening who've done this, some of this work, don't ever get disheartened if it's like, okay, this wound is coming up, like you were saying in your reading, because it just means like that it is just another layer, or it's on a deeper level. And or you're getting the exact formula that you need to like really let it go and step into this next, you know, phase. But as humans, we're always going to be growing and kind of navigating life in different things and learning different lessons. So there's never really a point where we're like, okay, I'm completely done and like right. something else to like work on or learn or anything like that. But you don't have to be held back. That's what I would say. It's like, you don't have to be held back by some of the things that have hurt you or have been hard for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And another piece of the reading that you gave me is that it is also connected to your generational lineage. Yeah. So if there's wounding from yeah. your mother or your grandmother, that's in there too. And yeah. I think those of us who are on this journey of learning how to heal our own systems energetically, physically, mentally, would you say that we're doing that healing for our ancestors or in yes. collection with yeah. Our tribe?
Yes, most of the time, especially I would say in this generation, this time, there is a lot of generational ancestral lineage healing. It's especially very prominent in the women that I read, because we also carry, you know, when we're in the womb with our moms, all of our like eggs and the stuff in our own reproductive system is also within us when we're in our moms and so on and so forth. So like there's a very, very strong connection between our maternal lines. And even if our moms try to make things different or like they're really working hard so that we don't have to experience the same things, if they haven't processed their own wounds, a lot of times it will show up for us and it will show up for us to release and to clear, because it holds back the line and it's just kind of like the natural progression of things. But one of the things I see the most often is that's where a lot of times when people say like mental health is genetic, a lot of times it's the energetic wound that's passed down and you then navigate life. You might not have the same mental health issues the whole time, but then you experience something that energetically matches or reminds your energy of whatever that wound is that your mom or your grandmother, your great-great-grandmother experienced. Mm-hmm. And it turns on that switch. It turns on that survival strategy, because a lot of, I would say most mental illnesses and difficulties are rooted in a survival strategy because it's rooted from a wound. So whether that's like personality disorders, all that kind of stuff, it is rooted in some type of ancestral trauma that was passed down. And I've seen it time and time again, you know, in various different ways. And a lot of times it is stored in our womb space, the like energetic coding for that, the energetic wound, because that's our creation center. So if there are unprocessed wounds there, you know, you creating the life that you want, what you create still might be kind of like not tainted, but have that coming from that place of fear or that wound. And it just changes the way that you feel about it, that you experience it.
Right. And I can totally speak to this, is after I started doing this energy work on myself, my relationship with both of my parents was improved exponentially. Like it's yeah. just a different relationship almost. And
yeah.
And so I know personally that doing this kind of work, understanding that there mm-hmm. is this connection, even if you're not going to your parents and saying, hey, I'm clearing this,
yeah.
it's energetic, right?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And you'll notice just the difference in even how you perceive them, perceive the mm-hmm. world, like how you understand different things, you know, and a lot of times what I found is when you do the energy work first, before you even like start therapy or while you're in therapy, it makes it so much easier. It makes a lot of times people go to therapy and they we think that in order to process emotions or let go of things that we have to talk about it with like our parents, for example, like say we experience mm-hmm. something difficult about our parents. Like you realize that the way that your parents navigated the world, even though they were doing the best they can, hurt you in this way or made you think or feel this way. A lot of people think, okay, well, I'm going to go to therapy so I can learn how to tell them. Or they'll ask, like, I used to get that question all the time. Like, okay, so what should I tell my parents? And you don't have to tell them anything to process right. it. And mm-hmm. energy work takes that pressure off. Because it's not, when you want to do that, it's not actually coming from a place of like healing. It's coming from a place of like, I want them to know, because it's either a survival strategy or it's a way to try to still connect with them, even though there's this like, you know, this disconnect. But energy work actually takes that pressure off. So you can see your parents as their own separate souls, because most of us are corded to our parents, are corded to their wounds, especially mm-hmm. their daughters. Mothers' unprocessed wounds, a lot of times their children are corded to those wounds. So that's why you'll have like a child who's like super, like a perfectionist or is super into these specific things or needs, you know, a certain type of like attention or responses or whatever, because they're corded to whatever the mom experienced, even if they didn't have an experience that at this point. So it makes it a lot easier, especially if you have a complex relationship with your parents, to do energy work with it, because it just clears you. And it also sets up your boundaries so that you and your parent aren't draining each other's energy and aren't creating from or experiencing life through each other's wounds.
Right. Right. And I think that's one of the most significant impacts, is that because you do want to have that healthy relationship with your parent. At the end of the day, you want your mom or your dad to be proud of you. You want them to see absolutely. You for who you are and all of those beautiful things. But when there's these wounds in the way or these blockages, it really just makes it so you guys can't even understand each other.
Yes. Yeah. And it makes it really, really intense, because then you're both coming at each other from a survival state.
Right.
And it sees it as like either them or you. And that's what a lot of times is the complexity of it, is when you're in a survival state, when you're both coming from that wound, you end up triggering each other because you have this energetic cord, and it can feel very karmic and very complex and icky. Mm-hmm. But there is, you know, on the other, if you're doing the energy work, it just makes it like, you know, I see you, you can do your thing over there. I love you, but I'm going to do the thing over here.
Right. Right. Exactly. And having that distinction, just understanding that there is like two separate souls that are having two separate experiences, and even having that clarity can help so much.
Yes.
And, and then when it comes to mental health and the energetic connection of, you know, the different disorders, I agree with you in that I think a lot of the mental issues that a lot of us deal with are energetic at their core, and then they manifest in ways that impact us physically, mentally, psychologically. Yeah. When you're talking about, or when you're explaining the energetic component of like depression or anxiety, what energetically is connected to those different disorders?
So when it comes to anxiety, energetically, what's going on is there is a disconnect with self, with your soul self, as a form of protection, because no matter what, your energy and your body like is going to protect your soul at all costs, even if that means like different pieces of your soul kind of have to go elsewhere or out of your body in order to protect itself. You know, and so anxiety is really there, A, to help you survive, because when you are disconnecting from your soul, you're then just kind of relying on these very human instincts, your ego. You're relying on your ego, your human self, to navigate the world, which means it's just focused on surviving. The beauty of anxiety energetically is like anxiety kind of leaves breadcrumbs depending on what symptoms you experience as to what is the core fear that needs to be dealt with in order for your soul to feel safe in your body again. And so energetically, like it can look like, for example, a couple years ago when I became a therapist and I was working, I had like 35 clients a week and everybody had anxiety. I created these things called the anxiety languages. And so one of them, for example, is called the martyr anxiety language. And that core fear is a fear of being unlovable, being a bad person, and then being unlovable. So a lot of times those subtle symptoms can be like, I need to help people all the time. Like, you know, I shouldn't be upset about this. There are people starving somewhere in the world, like invalidating their own experience, constantly fixated on doing things for other people so that they can be seen as good. They're so terrified of being seen as bad, and then that they won't be lovable or unworthy of love. So that tells us exactly where that, what that wound is. We don't, might not know exactly what it is at, when we just find out the language, but that gives us breadcrumbs as to where to go back to. How old did you first start feeling this? And so then you can see energetically, when did they first disconnect from themselves and what did they disconnect from? So that that way we can bring it all to the surface so that you're not operating from a disconnect anymore. You know, you're able to combine your body, your mind, and your soul to navigate the world. Depression is interesting because energetically it is, a lot of times what I see it is like it's unprocessed anger. So anger is a very passionate, very action-driven emotion. And when we ignore it or we swallow it, or we don't allow it to come to the surface, and or we don't feel safe with it, it still gets expressed, but usually just internally. It's also a level of numbing out. So a lot of times with depression, there is a fear of self, that you view your human ego self views your soul, your energy as the threat. So it continues to try to stifle, numb out, dull out to the soul self, because it views it as that is the threat to survival. That is the threat to existing is myself. So then what happens is like when you shut down, you're at first just trying to shut down this specific part of yourself, but compartmentalizing isn't really a thing that actually exists when it comes to emotions or energy most of the time. So it eventually, the longer that you are trying to numb out and dull out this part of your soul, the more it's going to spread. And then eventually, like, you don't have the energy to do anything because the energy is not coming naturally from you. So a lot of times people with depression, they'll notice that they're not really motivated about anything until it comes to like surviving or helping somebody else survive. But even then they feel detached, but it's only because they're kind of operating from other people's energy because they're disconnected from their own. And mental illness in general, how I see it as, it is when there is anything that is unprocessed that keeps us stuck. So mental health is just like our cognitive wellness. But mental illness is there is some type of wound, whether it be this life, a past life, that keeps us stuck, that we're not able to process, whether it's like we don't understand it, we're unwilling to face it, or we just didn't have the time to process it. But essentially, it keeps us stuck in that time, in that wound. Mm-hmm. So that, and we're trying to move forward, but we're unable to. So that, like, you know, that pool of having a panic attack randomly at the grocery store. I have people ask me that all the time. Well, I'm at a grocery store, like nothing's even threatening me, and I have a panic attack. Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't necessarily have to be straightforward. It can be maybe somebody else's energy was a vibrational match or reminded your energy or reminded your body of what the energy of somebody who did make you feel unsafe was in the grocery store, even if you're not talking to them. Or maybe there was some type of energetic shift that happened in the grocery store, something that triggered you on an energetic level to then now your body is reacting because it's going deeply into survival mode. So yes, hopefully that answered the question well enough. Okay.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think, especially with the pandemic, a lot of us did, because we were so separated from each other, we weren't necessarily crossing over into other people's energy as much as we were before. Yeah. And so for me, I have, you know, generalized anxiety and depressive disorder, but my social anxiety became just almost unmanageable, at least in the beginning after everything was opened back up. And I was just like, I can't even be around other people because I'm way too sensitive at this point.
Yeah.
So is social anxiety, is that kind of a subset of regular anxiety where you're split from your soul, or what is that?
Yeah. So there's still a part of you that's disconnected from a certain part of your soul. Mm-hmm. But even more so, I would say social anxiety is really this fear of other energies of other people, because your energy is so open and it's so open, but it's also ungrounded in yourself. So because you have that disconnect from yourself and you're ungrounded in your own body and your own energy, it's a lot of times very easy then for somebody else's energy to swoop in and impact you. And right. So then there's this fear of like, well, that's what I do agree with you in the sense of in the pandemic, people stopped learning, their energy stopped learning how to adapt or how to, you know, create barriers. And so when then we had to go back out into the world, people were like, I have no idea how to handle other people's energies anymore. And it really impacted. And so your body just, it's your body's reaction of like, okay, like I need to survive. I need to be on edge. I need to be prepared for fight or flight, because somebody else's energy could swoop in and impact me. And so that's really what that is yes, it's rooted in a disconnect from yourself. It's a survival strategy, but it also would tell me, okay, you don't have a lot of energetic, shields and things like that, things that help protect you against other people's energies from coming in. And that possibly, like, I would think, okay, maybe you have like the people pleaser anxiety language, because those individuals really struggle with, like, they'll try to mirror other people, or they will try to make themselves what other people want. So they are naturally overly sensitive, or not overly, but just very, very sensitive to other people's energy, because that's what they use as a way to make a connection with other people. They're disconnected from themselves. They learned at an early age, like, if I'm myself, I might be abandoned. They have a fear of abandonment. And so then what they do is they look at other people's energies and they kind of like take it as their own. So they're impacted by, okay, if someone else is angry, if someone else is sad, if someone else wants this thing, okay, maybe I should want that too, or I should do this. And this is what success looks like instead of internal. And that's why the social anxiety comes up. It's just the overwhelm, especially with the people pleaser language. Big groups are hard because you can't mirror big groups of people at a time. You can't become what every single person in a group wants.
Exactly.
So very uncomfortable. And a lot of times I'll find people who are like, yeah, I'm an introvert. And I'm just like, well, actually your energy is not naturally an introvert. It's just that you have this people pleaser anxiety language, and big groups exhaust you because you're trying to become all these different energies at once.
Right. This is like exactly my experience. So then when it comes to reconnecting and healing some of these wounds, so whether it's we're separated from ourselves or we are afraid of ourselves, how do we, I know it's a slow process. It takes time to reintroduce ourselves to ourselves, but what are some techniques that people can do to start this process?
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the big things that I have people do is, especially if it's anxiety because of that disconnect from self, we will do some inner child work. And the way that I have them start that is actually by like going back into, and I'm a really big advocate for journaling and writing, because it forces your energy. I know some people are like, oh, I don't want to journal. But what it does is it's grounding your energy in your body as you are writing out feelings or as you are processing things. It's a really great way to process and a really great way to get your nervous system to not freak out at a change in emotion. Mm-hmm. And if you do struggle with like your emotions and feeling really triggered, I always recommend storytelling. So tell the story of who you were as a child or a certain time frame, but write it in the third person, because your brain will register that as just like a story you're reading, entertainment, but it's actually expressing itself. So start with that. And what did you love to do as a child? Like, what did you dream of doing? Did you dream of being a princess? Did you dream of like being a mom? Even if you're like, that's not possible, start to reconnect with some of the things you enjoyed, and then figure out how to start to integrate that into your life a little bit, because it's going to start to make your inner child, it's going to allow them to come up to the surface so that they can process what needs to be processed and you can start working together. Another big thing is grounding and shielding energetically. This is like so important. It's important for your kids. It's important for you, especially if you have anxiety, because of that level of other people's energy. This is going to allow you to help understand, like, is this truly mine? Is this emotion mine, or is it someone else's? And it's also going to allow your nervous system to start being okay with like, okay, something felt uncomfortable. You know, I had something at the store today where I was like, oh, I feel like I'm feeling a little bit stressed out about that. And like, I know how my anxiety feels when I get like a burst of it. Mm-hmm. And I really ground into it. And I'm like, I'm not afraid of having this sensation in my body anymore. Like, I'm going to ground into it and we're going to see what it's about. And so having that grounding, that shielding practice is going to make a world of a difference in your patience and your ability to focus and your ability to navigate stressful situations and communication with other people. So that's a really big one. If you are looking into like energetic healings to be helpful, I would say the one to start with, especially if you want to try to like DIY it, is cord cutting. It's a pretty basic one, but it's super helpful. I cord cut every single night because I know, as somebody who does this work and also like cares very deeply about everything around me, everyone around me, mm-hmm. that sometimes like cords just naturally become like attached to me, or I naturally send out cords. So I call it all back. I cut the cords, I release them. And it makes a world of a difference, especially like if you struggle with sleeping. So yeah. I know those were like three.
No, those are all very helpful. And one that I can definitely vouch for is that calling your energy back. I do it every single night without fail, releasing other people's energy from my system. And it does. I can feel the difference in just allowing other people's energy to be their energy. And it's okay. Yeah. I don't have to absorb it all.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then when it comes to unprocessed anger, which leads to the depression eventually, how do you process that anger in a healthy way and then kind of release it, move it through your body?
Yeah. So it's really funny because one of the number one things that people worry about with anger is like, well, I don't want to yell at somebody. I don't want to like, you know, break things all the time. And everyone believes anger gets a really bad rap because we really believe anger has to be expressed in a super aggressive, like, or towards other people type of way. And absolutely not. Anger is this really beautiful, passionate, colorful emotion. Mm-hmm. And really, it's just asking for you to put boundaries in. It was like, hey, that threatened our survival. Let's fix it. Let's do something about it. So one of the things to start off with anger, if you're somebody who's uncomfortable with anger and you have a lot of unprocessed anger, if you are somebody who struggles with depression, start off with just like connecting with anger. Figure out like, almost like you're talking to a friend, like, okay, like, what does it feel like in your body? Where is it? And just those beginning things. And then what you can do is what my favorite thing. I have my 6-year-old has this. I have this. It's called a rage ritual. I swear by them. My 6-year-old benefits. Like our relationship is so much better because we have one and we actually will do it together sometimes. So our rage ritual is we have this plastic bat or like a broom. And whenever we are just really feeling angry and they like whatever it is, we will first like say, okay, I'm feeling angry. And we will hit our beds, the soft part of our beds with the bat or the broom and talk out. Like if she's angry with me or it'll be like, I'm really angry about this. This is how it made me feel. And like, you're talking it as you're actually taking a physical action because anger usually requires some type of physical action is helping to release it from the body. So it doesn't get stuck in the body. So even because sometimes people will be like, yes, that made me angry, but it doesn't actually feel, they're not feeling the emotion. It's almost like they're watching and they're not really. And so then nothing's getting processed. Nothing's getting released. And that's usually because they feel unsafe feeling angry, but creating this ritual that's intimate for you or your child is super important. It also creates subconsciously, it rewires your brain to say, oh, anger isn't dangerous to feel. And anger doesn't mean like I'm hurting somebody or somebody's hurting me. And so those are really important things to have. And you'll see like, especially with depression, the anger can feel overwhelming for the person because a lot of times it's been some type of years of trauma or years of trying to like telling their soul, like, no, you're the threat. So there's quite a bit that will come up. The best that if that's the case, do the rage ritual like 3 times a week. Even if you're not feeling angry, call up that feeling and allow yourself to release it physically so that it's not too overwhelming whenever you do the rage ritual, you know, once a week, every 2 weeks, whatever.
Mm-hmm. That is such a good tip. I am definitely going to be implementing that for myself. Because, you know, like the world I grew up in the 90s, it's like we weren't allowed to really feel our feelings. It was seen as something that, you know, was weak or, you know, you don't want people to see your vulnerabilities. And so it's just like you stuff it all down. And for me, when I started working with it, I was afraid in the beginning that like, well, if I start crying, if I start allowing myself to be angry, it's never going to stop because there's so much in there.
Yeah, absolutely. I know. I grew up in a household. My dad was like, never let them see you cry. Like, cry, or like, I'll give you a reason to cry. Like, I love my dad. You know, he's Black and he has a little bit more traditional views and expectations for his children. Like, I grew up saying sir and ma'am. Like, I have very old school manners. And anger was absolutely unacceptable as a child. Right, as a child, you had nothing to be angry about. You have a roof over your head. They feed you. Mm-hmm. And like you have, and if you ever had the audacity to talk about being angry, it was like, when I was your age, you know, mom and blah, 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 you know, it's so anger was, and you were shamed. Like I was shamed for being angry about stuff by both parents. And it's at no fault of their own. That was how they were raised and different things. But it was really hard for me to admit that I was like angry about things, and anger was only acceptable if it logically made sense. Right. If there was like somebody else literally did something that stifled you. Like it had to be so on purpose. Something had to be on purpose, and it could never be like with family. Like there's never a reason to be angry at family is essentially how I grew up. Like family is family. Who, you know, yeah, maybe they did this thing, but like, you know, you can't be angry at them, because to be angry was almost like to basically say, I don't love or appreciate or accept you, which is not what it is at all. Anger. Yeah. Anger is your own. And so it's really important to have these practices and to get to know your emotions, get to know what they feel like in your body, because you are going to feel angry throughout your life. Things are going to piss you off. And it's important to not just swallow it all the time or be like, oh, why is this making me angry? So yeah, I totally understand, because I was the same way where I started feeling angry and then I was angry about everything. It was like, it came out so fast that I was like, oh.
Yeah. And then it just like turns on yourself. And then I had this really deep, like my ideation, just self-hatred, because I was like, well, I can't be mad at the world, so there must be something wrong with me. And then that you spiral into a whole different, extremely unhealthy way of thinking.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I had that too. Like I had a really hard time in 2020. My partner died in 2019, but in 2020 and things were just not going the way I wanted. And like, or how I was viewing myself as a failure. And I had all this anger and I turned it inwards towards myself, where whenever something would go wrong, I'd be like, I would make it a narrative about myself.
Yeah.
And it was from a form of like anger, this anger that I was just keeping inside of me. It would come up and it would just turn on myself, and it made it really hard to want to do anything, to function. I was ashamed all of the time everywhere I went. And when you have unprocessed anger and shame around feeling angry, a lot of times what happens is that you create these masks because you don't want other people to see it. Yeah. And it can be really hard. And that's one of the things that makes the depression so isolating and things, is like you have this shame associated with it. But yeah, I also struggled with like various, just like this self-hatred ideation, where it was just like, you know, why am I even here? Like, I'm not actually helping anyone. I'm not of value. And it's painful. But when people experience that, and what I would say to people, if you're listening and that's where you've been, that's maybe where you are, to ask yourself, or not even ask yourself, but to picture your best friend or somebody that you love the most, and they are like, they're talking about this problem, and imagine you saying to them, you are not worthy enough. You are not like this, saying the things that you were saying to yourself. Try to picture saying to them. And you would never do that. In fact, it would hurt you to say that. You would probably be crying, and it would be feeling like forced against your will, because you don't feel that way. The love that you feel for other people and the goodness you see in other people is goodness that is also within yourself, and love for yourself that is also available. So try to reframe it in that way. I know it can be really hard. I did an exercise like that with some people at a conference this year, and it was just the most profound, like, and everybody in the room is like, they're like, you're right. I would never say the limiting beliefs or the unkind things I say to myself to somebody else. And so that is really going to help you to just create a different habit when you are facing something that is making you upset or facing something that's hard.
Yes. Thank you for saying that, because that self-love journey is a journey, first of all.
Yeah.
And also there is some shame and guilt around it, because then for me, there was this program that, well, if I'm like self-loving, then I'm going to be egotistical. I'm going to become a narcissist. All of these big, scary words that in truth, I don't know that we can really show up in a space and a loving way if we're not able to have that internal love for ourselves.
Yeah.
Because there'll be some kind of projection that's coming out that's not, you know, in a healthy way.
Yeah. Well, and even like, you know, it can be very lonely when you are afraid of like, oh, how am I going to come off if I do love myself, if I let myself, you know, and for many of us, especially women, we were brought up, even if it was like unconsciously, to be of service, to always say yes, to work really, really hard. I know for myself, my mom, you know, she's a Gen Xer, and she drilled in me, and my aunts and I come from a line of really strong women that nobody should ever, like, you should be able to provide for yourself and your family by yourself. You should don't let a man fully provide for your family, because you don't want to be left out in the cold. You don't want to be like, to always prepare for the other shoe to drop.
Exactly.
And make yourself like frightening, to make yourself so over smart, always over. I remember my mom said, you are going to have to work harder than every single person in any room, because you are a Black woman, you are disabled, And then when I was a single mother, like, you're a single mother. And she was like, you have to work so hard. And that narrative really was hard for me to shift, right. You know, so it's one of those things where you really have to decide what narrative is true for you as well.
Yes. So when it comes to identifying your narrative, how do you get in touch with it? Because I feel like I listen to people talk a lot of the times and I can hear what their narrative is, but a lot of the times they're not really conscious of the fact that they're storytelling about themselves. Yeah. Yeah. So how do you kind of help people bring that mirror in onto themselves?
Yeah. So one of the best things you can do, the thing about the subconscious mind is that it is going to come up when you're like, if you ask direct questions, it's really great at answering direct questions. So that's why like having the right journaling prompts are important and things like that. So one of the ways to identify, there's a couple ways you can identify your narrative. So say you're like, yeah, I work really hard and I'm this, and I believe this is possible for myself, but what are the actions that you're actually taking? So for example, for myself, you know, I can say like, I believe that I can do this goal. I believe that that this is possible, that everything, that this is working out for me. I believe that the things that my family has said are not applicable to me, but the way that I was showing up, how fiercely I was afraid of losing in sports, how I didn't want to go after certain sports because I didn't want to potentially face rejection or failure. The fact that my family, my siblings and stuff, I always joke around with them now, but like growing up, I was the unathletic one. And that was a narrative that I allowed myself to live out of, so much so that like I would work out for like 4 hours a day for like most of my teens and young adulthood, because I was like, but I would still say, no, I'm not an athlete. You know, I played 3 varsity sports in high school and I still didn't consider myself an athlete. Right. And so where is your behavior not matching up with what you're saying? And that's going to show you some of your narrative. The exercise I talked about before of like writing your story, writing it from the third person and making your past self or whatever a character you're writing about is going to tell you about the narrative of how you see your life, the limiting beliefs, you know, how you describe that main character. I have done a lot of work in the sense of storytelling, creative writing. It doesn't even have to be the same name, but I can see a lot of what I'm going through and what I believe is happening and how I'm viewing the world based off of the creative stories that I'm writing. I would say one of the most powerful questions you can ask yourself is, who did you have to become to receive love or survive? Who did you have to become? Right. Because that's going to tell you everything you need to know. You know, for me, I had to become this incredibly hard worker of service to everyone. And so the limiting beliefs that go along with that is like, in order to be loved, you have to be of service. You have to not fail. So those are things of how to identify those narratives, and you'll be able to pick them up pretty easily. The deeper ones can be hard to find, but you, as you're continuing to do this work, you'll see them. I recently, this summer, I got a reading from a friend. It was for my birthday. And I was like, oh, let's keep it like lighthearted and fun. I was like, for fun, she was like, what do you want to talk about? And I was like, I don't want to talk about like work or money, or it was like none of the like really serious topics that a lot of times people will kind of go to in readings. I was like, let's talk about like my future husband, because I'm not married or anything. I was thinking it was going to be like, just kind of like this light, fun hearted, like he's going to be like this and this. And it really, what my guides were like, no, we're going to like tell you what's up. And one of the things I realized after that reading was, and she told me, she's like, you were dating from your wounded inner child. And it was like a light bulb went off. I was like, oh my God, like all of my exes, all of the guys that I dated, you know, I had this reputation of dating kind of like dorky guys and all this kind of stuff. And they were great. And they're great guys. But I realized that they saw me as athletic. They saw me as like cool, because those are the things that I never thought that I was, that I wanted to be. And so the guys that I was attracting, that I was attracted to, it was because of those unhealed inner child wounds. And I realized the narrative I was telling myself about, oh, well, you know, you're not this or that, but like these guys will think that you do, even though this was a total subconscious.
Right.
Right. That's something where, you know, that was a narrative that I didn't even realize was like a thing. I just was kind of like, these are just the guys that I'm like into, even though I realized I was like, there's a different type, you know, whatever. So
yeah, totally.
Long story short.
Yep. And like, I completely resonate with the programming that you received early on around, needing to work hard and be twice as good as everybody else in order to be seen as just as good. I have to work through those same programs and narratives. And it's interesting to me on this journey of learning how to rewrite those programs. I know storytelling and journaling is a really key aspect of identifying those ideas or narratives, but what are some techniques to learn how to actually rewire your subconscious to get new ideas in there?
Yeah. So once you have identified them, it makes it a lot easier to rewrite them. So some of the things that you can do is meditations are great, like guided meditations, guided healings. Healings are one of the main ways that I rewrite things because it totally shifts my energy. If you work with a professional, like a healer, they can do like a lot of different stuff of even like, because sometimes certain narratives and programmings, especially if they're passed down to us, are really in our energetic code. So they can rewrite it, take it out, all that kind of stuff. But a DIY way would be to see what your narrative is. What do you actually want the narrative to be? Like, what do you actually want? And take small action every single day, even if it's like terrifying. So like, you know, if you're somebody who's like, okay, I always believed that, you know, running was hard, but I've secretly always dreamed of like running a race or running a marathon. Start with just like, do a 2-minute run, just like or a 2-minute jog, and just start to get your nervous system and telling yourself. So instead of just like affirmations, a lot of people are like, do affirmations to rewire. The affirmations only work if there is an emotion behind it, an emotion. And whatever your emotion is when you're saying things is what's ultimately going to shift it. Mm-hmm. If I'm telling myself I'm beautiful and I, this, and I'm saying it from a place of where I can feel that I don't believe it. I can feel that I actually feel like the ugly duckling or whatever. The affirmation isn't going to work. It's the opposite is actually going to work. And so there will be more situations where I see myself as whatever that narrative is. So when you're doing affirmations, when you're taking small action, try to connect, even if it's just for a second, with what it would feel like to have that thing or to already be that thing. And that's going to help to rewire your subconscious. But other than that, the meditations are huge.
Yeah. This conversation has been so helpful. I mean, I see so much of myself in you. It's just like, this is fantastic.
Yay, I'm glad.
Yeah. And so what kind of offerings do you have for people? Where can they find you?
Yeah. So you can find me on Instagram at Anna Marie F. Green. And I'll provide that information to you as well. So you can like put it in the show notes or how you want to do it. And the offerings I currently have, so there's two main offerings. I have a reading healing combo, which is what you receive. So it's a 60 to 75 minute reading where we dive into whatever the problem area or problem areas that you tell me in the sign up thing. And I tell you the root cause, what's going on, why it's going on, and then specific steps to clear it, heal it so that it's not a problem for you. And then I also do, while I'm in there reading, I'm also doing healing so that your energy is shifting. You feel very different and it allows things to come up to come out. Yeah. And so it gives you a lot. I always joke around. It's kind of like getting like 6 months to a year's worth of therapy in one swing and knowing what to do, like to clear it. And then healings, if that's not for you, I do offer 30-minute healings where I go in, you tell me what's going on and I do the healing. And then I tell you what was going on. And, you know, if there's any physical integration steps to let the energy and healing settle. So, and if you have any other questions on working with me one-on-one, you can always like reach out. I do longer containers as well, but this is just what I have available right now.
Yeah. And I've seen on your Instagram, you do like weekly intuitive readings, which are also really great.
Yes. Yeah. So if you follow me on Instagram, I do a weekly intuitive like guidance. So you will pick a message number one or message number two, and you'll decide which one's for you for your questions. So that's one of my like little freebies. There's other freebies I have on my website. I have a empowerment/confidence workbook that is super awesome with really great tips on improving your confidence and feeling being able to ground in your own power.
I love it. Well, thank you again so much for coming on. And I really hope to have you on again in the future because I know there's so many other topics we can dig into. I know.
Yes, dive deeply into. Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Of course. And if you want to reach out to me, you can find me on Instagram at Mental Magic Podcast with a period in between each word. Thanks as always for listening. Bye.